So, John, would you please introduce yourself, tell us about your background, how you ended up deciding to form the National Liberty Alliance, but also tell us about your before you started in L.A., okay?
All right, well, we'll talk a little bit about that. Just let you know, Gerard's in on the line with me, piggyback in, so he's here. Basically, you know, we had started off originally here in New York with the New York Committeemen. We were trying to, you know, get control of the parties through the committeemen. And that was a good possibility if you can really build a large group of people with the right kind of focus to end politics and just still deal with the political processes. But, of course, that's quite difficult to do, and these people really hold very closely the reins of the political process. And so when you try to go into the courts to, you know, get them to let go because they don't have certain authorities or rights, wasn't elected properly or things of that nature, you know, the whole thing is status quo, so the judges never ruled for us, and, of course, that's how we learned the law. But in the process of working on the New York committeemen and also working on the national end with the, you know, with a committeeman, we learned about, you know, the common law, of course, and we learned how to write papers. We got a lot of experiences in the courts. And then we found this paper, United States versus Williams, where Justice Anton Scalia, writing for the majority, wrote a stunning conclusion to a case concerning the grand jury, which really laid things out very powerfully that the people really have the power and the control over their nation, over their servants, through the grand jury, because we come to understand and realize that if you can control the courts, you control the political processes. You control all these people out of control that are breaking their oaths through the Constitution. And whenever any elected individual, whether a judge or their a congressman or a governor or anybody, if they violate their oath, that puts them, as the Constitution puts, into bad behavior. If you go into Black's Law Dictionary and you look up good behavior and bad behavior, that's what you'll discover is really they're violating their oath. And they no longer have a right to their office. And so the question is, well, how do you remove them from office if they're violating their oaths? Because pretty much every elected official out there is indeed violating their oaths. Congress is bringing forth the things that are not constitutional. Courts are ruling on positions and laws and things that are not constitutional. And how do you control that? That was the big question. But that's when we discovered United States versus Williams, and it came together, and it was an epiphany. And we really understood that's how you remove them through an indictment. So we can take total control of our government, 100%. We the people. We have a contract with these people. You know, judges will tell us or people will tell us, well, look, you elected these people. They went out. They created the law. So we gave them authority to do that. Therefore, they have the authority to do what they're doing. But that's not true. We gave them the authority to do certain things, but we were very specific on what those things were. And you'll find that particularly in legislators. You'll find that in Article 1 of the Constitution, particularly around, I think it's Section 8, 9, and 10 particularly. But, you know, the whole Constitution in itself. But those particular, Article 1 particular focuses in on by what authority we've given to Congress. We certainly haven't given them 99% of what they're doing. We did not give them authority to do that. So they're in bad behavior right now. And once we get a better footing into the system, we're about ready to write a paper to Congress, and we're going to, you know, hold them accountable. I'm not sure which Congress this is, but I think this is the 115th Congress, maybe the 114th, somewhere around there. But this Congress is going to be held accountable for the sins of all Congresses from this point forward because they're going to become an educated Congress. We're going to write papers which are mandamuses. We've already written what's called a quo warranto, which ultimately is similar to a mandamus, but it's got a lot more power and clout to it, and it lays out the authority that we've given them and the things that they've been doing that they don't have the authority to do. So they already know at this point they've been put on notice. We've written 10 papers altogether and filed them into the courts. And we've written letters, or shall I say mandamuses, commands, to the sheriffs, to the governors, to the Congress, to the all of the judges, and pretty much everybody in power. Now we're going to write a very special one heading out towards Congress, which again is going to put them, make them accountable, because they're going to know. We're going to explain to them, which we've already really done, but we'll explain a little more in this next paper, how they're going to be held accountable, because now they know and they can fix it. And now they know that they are violating the Constitution. They know that subversion is taking place within them. And they know that they need to step up and do something about it. And one of the first things they need to do is allow the American people to protect themselves through the militia. And the Constitution, says quite clearly in Article 1, I believe, Section 9, where Congress is commanded to make sure that that they are funded, that the militia is funded, well funded, as a matter of fact, is the word used. And they also are to make sure that they are organized across the United States in a compatible way from state to state to state. But the power of choosing the leadership within each state falls onto the governor. Okay, and so that brings the power back to the states. And if we had the militia in full force, we wouldn't have any problems, because the militia is we the people. We would be the people that would be standing up to protect our borders, to protect our food and our any other resources within our counties. But they've failed to do this, and we're going to remind them and show them what they need to do and command them to do it. Should they not do it, then we're going to start seeking indictments. Now, we've sent papers on to the United States Supreme Court, giving them some orders also, and laying out the things that they need to be doing. The subversion would not be possible, and we would not be having a lot of these problems in the courts if the United States Supreme Court was really doing their job. I think we have a handful of justices that are still on the people's side. I think Scalia is one of them. But I think they're alone, and I think I think they got the gun to the head, so to speak. And so we will take that into accountability. After all, Scalia gave us, this was a 1992 decision on United States versus Williams. He gave us that decision, and he went way, way out of his way to lay out the power and the authority of the people through the grand jury, and we structured everything we're doing around that, and also using a lot of the ways things work as a grand jury from the Magna Carta. So we're in a position right now. We're in the courts. We started filing papers, and as I mentioned, I think it was back in May we started filing these papers. We've got 10 papers in the courts. And we've went and talked with the judges, commanded to the judges. They've all been very silent. And in common law, and in just reality in itself, silence when you have a duty to speak is fraud. Even the United States Supreme Court has ruled that numerous times. And that's where they're at. They are silent, and therefore they are fraudulent. And we understand why. They're involved with organized crime, and our entire government is really involved in this. Some of them are just useful idiots, and I don't know the portions. I would only take guesses. But clearly some of these people understand what they're doing. Clearly they're in there to subvert our nation and take to lose America and to take away our liberties. But clearly a lot of them also are just useful idiots. They're not paying attention. A lot of them maybe are just so lost in their power and lusts of the power that they have and the ability and things that they're able to do, they're not paying attention, or they sold their souls. Some of these people are acting and responding maybe because they've been, blackmailed. I hear all the time out in Washington, D.C., they have all these parties and different things, and you can imagine how easy it would be to set people up and put them into precarious situations and have some evidence that would embarrass them, or even evidence that would put them away in jail. And therefore, now the elite, the people behind our government, has total control. You know, back in the 1800s, I think it was in 1871, they wrote a particular act, and I'm trying to think of the name of that act. It slips my mind. But in any event, it laid out the power and the authority and twisted the meaning of Article 1 of the Constitution, I think, again, Section 9, Numbers 16 and 17, where it talks about Congress should make the laws and they would have 10 square miles to create Washington, you know, which is the federal city. Our founding fathers called it the federal cities, city. They call it Washington, D.C. D.C. is the District of Columbia, and they've extended that out to territories. And ultimately, they really created a whole world and a whole nation, a whole country onto its own. And it's run by foreigners, ultimately. There is an oligarchy behind the president. The president is not a president any longer. There is an oligarchy there. And they also control Congress through bribe and blackmail. And they control the courts through lust and RICO. All these court systems, all these judges are guilty of RICO. It doesn't take long for someone to go into the courts and spend some time trying to get justice. And after a while, you know, it's like a puzzle. You put it together and you start to realize what's really going on. And it's all about payola. Everybody's being paid off. And the judges are making fortunes. There's all kinds of things going on. And there is no justice. People are losing their children. People are losing their homes. And people are losing their liberty. They've created all these laws, and therefore we have been imprisoned in statute. It's a statutory prison. You know, don't do this and don't do that. And they'll stop us for this and they'll stop us for that, and they'll put us in jail. And then if you backtalk them or try to get your rights into the court, they get you for contempt. So the whole thing is a sham, and it's destructive, and we got some major problems. But we did find their Achilles heel, because all we need to do is get into the courtrooms under the power and the authority of the grand jury, which still has their power, and they still fear that. They try to say that we don't have power or the right to do it, that they have to kind of choose the grand jury. Now, I don't know how they get that kind of logic, but they know that that's weak. That's a weak, weak argument. And a lot of them just don't say anything because they're afraid and they don't know. Now, we've done some habeas corpuses, and habeas corpuses have been almost done away with in the United States. You will not get a judge that will allow a habeas corpus to go through the system. Because, you see, in order to get a habeas corpus, you have to petition the court. And the habeas corpus was designed for a free man to maintain his court. If you are in a situation in a court that is foreign to you, and all of our courts are foreign, they run under what's called chancery, and therefore the judge in the courtroom is the king, and he acts as a king, he rules as a king, he decides as a king. And he could make what he wants up off the bench, and they do. And the people don't know that. But this is what's going on. But anyway, all of these courts are chancery, and when you go into these court systems and then you lay out a habeas corpus and put it onto the record, it's an extremely powerful paper, and it takes you out of that jurisdiction. And because they can't answer the habeas corpus, for if they answer the habeas corpus, they would have to lie, and they'd have to do that under oath, and therefore they would go to jail. If they don't answer the habeas corpus, well, then they're in default, and also they're guilty of fraud, because silence, when they have a duty to speak, is fraud. And obviously, when you put a habeas corpus before a judge and command that judge to say, to tell why this person is in chains, why is this person incarcerated, by what authority are you acting, they can't answer those questions, and they're certainly not going to answer them under oath. After all, they don't even answer things under oath in their own courts because of fear of being held liable for it. How much more in a court of justice when you open up what's called a court of record, which is a true Article III court. You know, these are the things that we're working on, and here's where the power and the authority is. National Liberty Alliance, over the past 2 years, we've been national, obviously. National is in our name. We originally were going to just do New York, and we figured maybe other states would follow. But many people from many states were coming to our meetings, so we went national about 2 years ago. And since then, we have reinstated the common law grand jury in every single county in America by taking out ads, press releases through the local papers in every county, calling the people together to come to a place, explaining to them the problems and what the grand jury is all about and common law particularly. And it's been almost unanimous across the entire nation. Yay, let's go forward. We want to do it. And so we did get the people's involvement across the nation locally by doing this across the nation. And so now we are established in every single state. We're still working to really take a strong establishment in every county. But there are some states that we do have people in pretty much every county. New York at this point might very well be one of those states. I haven't looked in a while. A while back, we were still shy a few counties, but we might have people in every county now. And we're not the only state. There are quite a few states out there that have people in every county. But the key thing is that we have established ourselves in every state, and every state has unified the counties, and they've come together in a grand jury named, for instance, the state of New York, or shall I say New York State, would be the unified common law grand jury of New York, okay? And we have one for Arizona, California, Washington, Florida, all 50 states. We even have them in Hawaii and Alaska. So we have, unified common law grand juries in every single state, unifying every county. And then we came together on a national level, and we put together what's called the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. And it is through that we are flexing our muscles, going into the courts, filing papers, and going after these people, particularly judges. And so all of the filings have been done unified under the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. So we go into the courts with power and authority of the people. We have many thousands of members, so we've grown very quickly. It's become a very popular organization because of the power and the authority that we're offering back to the people on the grassroots level. And we've established ourselves in all 94 federal district courts. When we file a paper, for instance, on any of these people, whether we filed it to the governor, we would serve all 50 governors by mail. We would then follow up with a fax copy to all the other recipients, which is about 12,500 elected officials across America. And then this would be filed in all 94 courts by U.S. mail. And we would do the same with others when we filed the papers on the we filed papers on the United States Supreme Court. We served all of the justices, and then we filed them in all 94 courts. When we filed papers on all the sheriffs, we sent them out to the sheriffs, and we filed them in all 94 courts. We are working diligently, laying these papers out and getting everything on record. Now, this is a major problem for them. I'm sure many people heard of Jade Helm, and a lot of people were trying to stop that. They were supposed to go forward in June. They didn't. They were supposed to go in July. They didn't. In August, they didn't. And right now, I'm not hearing anything anymore. And one of the things we did is we revealed Jade Helm to all of these people in a paper. I forget which paper. We did one that was really on all elected officials, and it was in that one. But we also did a paper directly to all 50 governors, and we let these governors know that should Jade Helm go forward on their soil, they would be guilty of subversion, and we will indict them. And that went out just about in June or July, I forget exactly when. It was right before they were really going to start to move through the country with this Jade Helm business. But they stopped. They haven't done anything, and we truly believe it's because of the paperwork we did. We revealed their sins. We've laid it out. And we served not only our elected individuals in Congress and in every state of the union, every every senator and an assemblyman in every state, and of course U.S. Congress and U.S. senators, and the governors, I mean everybody, judges, whether it's state judges or federal judges, everyone had been served. But we even went beyond that. We also, of course, the sheriffs, there was like 3,000 sheriffs, we served all those. And there is also, of course, the marshals, the U.S. marshals. So we served them. We let them know what we were doing. They got the same papers. We also went after the FBI special agent in charge. For every federal district has a special agent in charge. Every federal district has a U.S. marshal. All 94 of each of those have been served also. But we didn't even stop there. We also went into the military, and we served the military. So the sins of these traitors within our government has been revealed, and we have posted it in all 94 federal district courts, and we're continuing to post it. You know, at first, you know, they didn't take us serious. After a while, they started to worry, and then maybe they started finally reading our papers. The whole business behind our papers is really about education. And we always put forward the olive branch, of course, to let these people know that, hey, you know, you've got the option. Just cross the line and come on our side with the people. And we're not going to go chase you for the sins of what's going on, so to speak. There's going to be a time when that's going to be too late to cross that line. And when we reach that time, we will indict and we will put these people in jail. It's all a matter of power and authority, and that's what we the people need to get. We the people ordained and established this Constitution for them. And this is the point that we're bringing up to them. And they realize this. They have no power. They have no authority. But where did they get that? They got that from us. And if we're telling them that they don't have it from us to do the things they're doing, then what do they have but nothing? And it just takes a while for this to kind of reverberate through their whole system to start to realize and understand these things. And then the fear of justice on their back should really kind of start, you know, getting them to the point where they'll either be looking for a hiding place or maybe taking the chances of coming over and working with us. So we're coming. They know we're coming. They hear the trumpets of Jericho as we surround the federal city. Figuratively speaking, and we go around them blowing the horn and getting ready for the shout of justice to come by. We're waiting. It's all God's timing, of course. So we're waiting for that influx. We're waiting for that landslide of people, which surely will come, and I think it's very close. Our rankings are growing very quickly. They have been constantly, consistently. And not too quick, might I add. And that, of course, was very important that it wasn't too quick because we wouldn't have been able to control and maintain integrity, a sense of honor, justice, and mercy, which is what we teach. And so we've been able to maintain those things and keep out all the egos that come in from time to time to try to seize power and exercise power here. So we're ready to do things, and I think we're ready for that landslide. And when that happens, game over. We the people win. Now, one of our biggest things that we're doing is educating the sheriff. And everything we do really is kind of frameworked around educating the sheriff because they need to understand the power and the authority by which they act. They need to understand better what their real job is. They are the constitutional law enforcer. That's who they are. They are to serve the Constitution directly. They execute judgment on behalf of the Constitution. And they do this both in the courts and in their counties. You know, the fact that you rarely see sheriffs given tickets, and I'm sure you do see them from time to time because they've lost their way too, but generally speaking, they're not doing it. That's the corporate police doing that. And they probably don't want the sheriffs doing that because the sheriffs are different. The money flow would not go the same way, I don't think, if sheriffs were really involved in that. But in any event, sheriffs are to execute the judgments of the court as long as it's constitutional, just. Their job is not to be a code enforcement officer to seek out to look what laws we might be breaking. Their job is to be a constitutional officer to see what violations our servants are breaking against us and to do something about it. What a lot of sheriffs don't understand or know is they themselves have the authority not only to call the grand jury and not even have to go through the prosecutor, and this is where they fail. We had a situation here in New York where we were going after some big-shot judges down in New York City, about eight of them, and we went to the sheriff, and we tried to get the sheriff on our side. At first, they didn't seem – they thought. I think at first they thought we were kind of nutty. But anyway, when they started to look at the things we had in the Constitution, they came along and they realized that we were right on what we were talking about. And they said, well, look at, you know, the reality of life is, you know, we got to get the prosecutor on the side. Because if I go out and arrest somebody.
John, excuse me. I just want to check with you here. Before we go to questions from the audience here, Gerard, like to make a few comments?
Gerard, you still here? Well, you're going to have to you're coming in like Mickey Mouse here. What do you call it? Gerard, you're going to have to hang up and come back in. You're coming in really bad.
So, yes.
Right, while he's doing that, let me just finish off with the sheriff thing because this is an important point. This sheriff we spoke with, he said to prosecutor, we got to get him on our side because if I go out and arrest somebody and he doesn't go along with it, he's just going to let him go, you know? So at that time, you know, it didn't dawn on us, but going through this process, it dawned on us that the power and the authority of a prosecutor over a sheriff, and it's insane. But we went to talk with the prosecutor. We showed him the laws. The laws were in his, we even used his laws, you know, the statutes. And it was in his books, and he refused to enforce them. So we left there, and as time went on, we started to realize how we can go about dealing with this because history shows us normally – usually it's the sheriff that calls the grand jury, not the prosecutor. Either or could, but it used to be that the sheriff... Excuse me. Let me get a drink of water here. Anyway, it's usually the sheriff that calls the grand jury. And also in history we have learned that sheriffs have actually run courts without a magistrate. We've also found that even coroners can run a court. So you can have a coroner's court, and you can have a sheriff's court, and it's perfectly legal. They can go forward without a judge or a magistrate, shall I say.
Right.
And same role as the judge or the magistrate or the judge, whichever comes in. They would have to be in the role of a magistrate anyway. But they would play the same role, which is just traffic cop, make sure things move along and things happen and the case just goes forward. And that's really their only job. They don't get the opportunity to make a decision. They don't get the opportunity to make a penalty. That all belongs to the trial jury. And the grand jury is for an indictment. So now we need to let these sheriffs know, and we're in the process of doing that, and we think we have about five sheriffs that are interested in arresting some bigwigs, judges, I hope. But they're interested in what we're doing. They want to know how they can go forward and do these things. So we're going to show them on how it is that they have the absolute authority to bypass the prosecutor, call in the people, get their indictment, and go up and put these judges in handcuffs, or even the governor of the state. It doesn't matter. Whoever he wants to put in jail, because that sheriff can arrest the president of the United States if he's in his county. And so that's the power and the authority of the sheriff. And that's what they should be doing is protecting the people. That's what he's there for. All right. But with that, Gerard is back. So we'll see once if he wants to add or has anything to say. Go ahead.
I lost my train of thought after all that. Between rebooting and booting. Look, they're not going to like us much because they're going to lose a lot of revenue because all these Nisi Prius courts where they're pulling people in and making all this revenue that was never meant to be are going to go away. And, you know, the towns aren't going to like it and the prosecutors and the judges aren't going to like it, but they're going to have to get used to it. You know, the trouble is some of these towns have now, well, some of them, most all of them now, they depend on all this traffic ticket stuff for 30% of their budget. Imagine that. You know, it wasn't that many years ago they didn't get hardly anything from the courts. Now they're getting 30% of the budgets, you know, by highway robbery, by pulling people over and doing a monetary rape of them under extortion, you know, telling them they can't drive their cars and stuff. So that's a big one. And, you know, the people have to get educated that those courts have no authority over them. And they're going to have to tell the people or we're going to indict them. So that's a big one. And people look at you like you got three heads when you say that. But look, they were never meant to put us under that kind of a control. You know, all those crazy statutes that they write are for them. Look, I don't want my public official driving more than 55 miles an hour. That's for him. That's our car. That speed limit is for him. As far as the speed limits for me, it's prudence. Unless somebody calls up and says that I ran through the neighborhood and put them at danger and there's an injured party, a complaining party, you should never get a speeding ticket. They say, oh, how can we drive with no speed limits? Well, how could you do anything without responsibility? How can you carry a gun? How can you own a car? How can you own a house? How can you do anything that you're not responsible for? You see, that's that liberal type thing where they don't think people can think for themselves, and it's gotten to the point, it's ridiculous. We have a couple of films on the site, by the way. I just want to mention this really quick. If you go to nationallibertyalliance.org, we have a few of them there where different countries where they turned off all the traffic signals, no stoplights, and it's amazing how people go through those intersections, especially in countries like Africa. They did it in England. It looks like blood cells in an artery. People hesitating, going this. Nobody's banging off of anybody, and they've improved the traffic exponentially. It's unbelievable. Everybody thinks you need all this traffic signal. Everybody's looking at the light when the light's red, and it turns green, and they hit the gas. It doesn't matter. There's a little kid crossing the road. So we create all this craziness by not giving people the opportunity to be, you know, gentlemen and women, you know what I mean? And instead we're focused on the stupid traffic light. And then you got the stupid traffic cop going over there. Oh, you rolled through. You got to see those tapes with no traffic lights. It's amazing. It looks like a symphony of the cars moving. It's really, 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 really neat. You wouldn't think it was possible, but people actually get used to it. They drive intuitively. People are actually more courteous than we give them credit for. So that type of thing you'll see probably go through. It almost sounds like a utopia, but that's where we need to be. We need to be, you know, where we're not always looking out our back windows, wondering when they're going to pull us over for something that we didn't even do. So, you know, it's going to be a big change. But it'll be a breath of fresh air, believe me. And part of it is going to be starting in these courts and putting them back under the Constitution and getting rid of all the baloney, all the courts of no accountability. You know, they really don't have jurisdiction. They trick you into jurisdiction. They make themselves feel better because they think that they're contracting with you. You know, and like when they say, do you understand the charges? And you go, yeah, I understand. Really what it means is, do you acknowledge our authority over you to stand under these charges? They don't tell you that, you know. And when you plead, basically what you're doing is saying that you accept their authority. And the average person doesn't know that. And that's what a big, big part of this is going to be education. Education and that's part of what National Liberty Alliance is going to do. One of the things is you know, they've took the civic courses out of the schools, and the civic courses are a person's relationship to their government. People have no ideas. Look at, they've been brainwashing us for years. They always show the feds coming in on the cop movies, and they go and the local police all getting out of the way for the feds. Who created that baloney? Since when does a federal agent know how to fight crime in a local area better than the local police or better than the sheriff, you know? And They're centralizing everything. You know, I was on a town council for 4 years, and one of the things they got this disaster preparedness, and what it's about is handing off your authority to the higher officials. Well, let me tell you something. If there's a disaster, or if there's an attack, or there's nobody better to run your local neighborhood than your local people. They know the resources. They know where things are. You start handing that stuff off to a federal guy. First of all, one of the things that they do is they claim they can take the resources from this community and run them over to the other community. Do you want to trust the federal government with your resources so that they can feed Washington, D.C. and whatever else they want to feed? Anyway, that's one of the things that we have to stop. We have to decentralize the control. Look at, every community should have their own power plant so they can't take the grid down. That's the way it used to be.
Say, someone out there needs to hit *6. We're getting this, sounds like a baby screaming something.
It sounds like a hawk attacking a chicken.
Yes.
Hey, that sounds like a bird of prey. Hey, now that we've got about, got less than 18 minutes left, I want to invite, I've got several people that want to make comments and ask questions. I want to start out with the chief of the Kodit Nation. I'm traveling with him in a car right now, and his wife, Connie. This is Chief Laverne Bassforth, chief of the Lakota Nation. Chief, please share why you are a constitutional attorney, not an attorney, why you choose to take a bar, and yet you take a bar exam, but you have taught at Indian College in Kansas. And what was the name of it?
Well, first of all, Haskell Junior College, an old industrial college back from 1884, but when I had been in prison so many times, our tribal people were getting so tired of being in prison that we finally came to the conclusion that the United States government, since 1781, in a Dallas Pueblo case, it was determined there was no jurisdiction. So my question was, well, where did they get jurisdiction since then? Is that case still on the books with the U.S. Supreme Court? And it turned out that the real problem wasn't really the government or the society or the regional government or even the tribal government. The issue was our people. Our people are the way that they're able to attach their jurisdiction to us because we're not people, we're property. So when they read off your indictment or charges in full caps, then basically they're reflecting to your CUSIP bond as a property. But so we don't recognize the federal government. We don't even recognize our own tribal government because they're all dependent governments. They're part of the England Corporation. So what I try to teach our people is that if we're going to behold our solidarity embedded in the treaty, then we just need to be sovereign folks. We own this land of the United States, and everybody else is foreigners. So how can a foreign government have any sort of, jurisdiction over our tribal government? And I guess the issue came up when we were paying out all of this revenue sharing to the Ronald Reagan Indian Gaming Regulatory Act, where we have to have the Department of Interior, first of all, recognized as a federal government. And then secondly, we have to have a compact with the state government that says, no, that can't be real. That's not right. So we filed under the Tucker Act or the Indian Claims Commission Court Act 46, we filed a lawsuit against the president claiming, you know, I don't think you've got any authority over the Indian people. I mean, how could you possibly have authority? You're not even a government. You know, most of your regulative agencies are all Delaware corporations. You're a non-profit Delaware corporation. Where in the world do you guys have standing? So why don't you guys take a hike and, you know, we'll take back our Mother Earth and call it a day, okay?
Well, you know, we here at National Liberty Alliance agree with a lot you have to say. We also have a problem. I'm a New Yorker. We, the people in New York, are also oppressed by this federal government out of control. You know, we have Hawaiians with us, America just went in. The United States, the corporation, not the United States, we, the people, the United States, the corporation, which has overtaken the United States, we, the people, they've taken control of our federal city, and they went to many places and took territories by force. And one of the places they took is they went to Hawaii, and the Hawaiian people never wanted this. They never asked to join the union or anything. Now, of course, they've been with us for quite some time, and we have quite a few Hawaiians with us. We are also established in Hawaii, and some of these Hawaiians are original people from Hawaii. You know, they're not necessarily from offland. They're right from the islands of Hawaii. They have a right to rule themselves. They're a sovereign country. Hawaii is a sovereign country. Indian reservations are sovereign countries. I think you got a bad deal here. They put you on. They didn't give you the best of land. That's obvious. There's plenty of great land that they could have given to the Indians, and allowed them to be sovereign people, and offered them if they wanted to join the union. And the union was really a way of power and authority by the people. And, you know, the whole thing was to be that I live in New York. I was born in New York. I'm a New Yorker. And my country, I live in the country of New York. That's my country, not the United States of America. The United States of America is a union or a nation. And there's a difference between being a country and a nation. But I agree with the Constitution, the way it's set up, if it was applied correctly. These people don't have the authority to rule over the states. They're supposed to serve the states, and the purpose of the union was to make stronger the states and to set certain laws in the sense of being able to move from one state to another without having to get a passport or go through any problems. I can pick up tomorrow morning and I can go to Jersey, or I can go to Pennsylvania, or I can go to Texas, or I can go to California, and the moment my feet hit that state, I plant myself in that state, I become a Texan. I become a Californian. I have all the rights to be one, and I don't have to do anything special. I don't have to sign in anywhere. I don't have to tell anybody anything. I have all the rights of California. And the California rights should be the same, pretty much, with some different tweaks here or there, as any other state, because we're all under common law. And so, yes, they have turned us all into chattel, and we're just livestock to them.
Exactly, John. I've got three ladies I would like to invite on because they've been talking to each other. Two of your National Liberty Alliance, these two ladies have formed the Child Services Exposure.
Yeah, that's our CPS. Yes, that's our CPS that National Liberty Alliance has started, and these women have done a great job working with the people and getting out there to work to help us to save the children. But go ahead.
No, I believe that the CPS committee is going to be the most powerful, influential committee that NLA has in the future. And here is a Chief Fast Horse wife, Connie. Would you make a few comments, Connie?
Good evening, everyone, and thank you, Doug, for letting me speak for a little bit. I was listening to most of the conversation, and I realized I wanted to mention something that back when the reservations were first formed, our people, if they were full-blood, had to have permission to come and go off the reservation. And so, therefore, some of them put themselves down when they did the census as 7/8 so they could come and go as they please. Otherwise, they would have to have written permission to go off the reservation by the agent. And so it they were formed as prisoner of war camps, and they were numbered as such under the War Department. And they still maintain those numbers as of this date.
Okay, now I want to mention that Chief Bathurst here just took over as a national leader, not only of his own Lakota Nation, but also of all the Indian nations in America, as well as representing all the indigenous people in four continents. And so he, one of the first things he did before he became chairman as a leadership attendee and a participant, he learned that in 5 years, 22,000 children in the on the Indian reservations were taken from their homes and put in what I consider they were kidnapped and put in homes without their parents, had their hair, forced to have a hair cut, et cetera, et cetera, and couldn't talk their own, speak their own language. And so the chief here a year and a half ago, roughly, maybe 2 years ago, he filed a lawsuit, and in a year and a half, he was able to force the state of South Dakota and the Child Protection Services to release all 22,000 children. So they're making waves that we as individuals have not been successful doing to date. Now I'd like to invite...
Well, I'd like to just say something about that, if I could, just real quick.
Okay.
And if you guys ever need any assistance with that kind of stuff, National Liberty Alliance can assist you with that. But I'd like to invite the tribes to come join us at National Liberty Alliance. We have 50 groups. We started off with 50 groups, which is all 50 states. And we're now actually even reaching outside of the United States, and Canada wants in, England wants in, and many other countries or nations, shall I say, wants in. And I'd like to try to accommodate the tribes. If the tribes would come in, we would create a special place on our site where the tribes can come together and work together within their own tribes, but also work as a unified people across this great nation of ours to work together to bring the sovereign states back into power over this out-of-control federal government that we all suffer under. So that anytime you could, any of these tribes would like to give me a call and talk about that, they can get me at 845-233-6560. That's 845-233-6560.
Oh. Thank you, John. I appreciate that invitation. Chief, do you want to respond to that invitation?
Well, when we concluded after the Shemitah, what's going on in Philadelphia next month, where the United States has to come back underneath the Constitution and disavow their corporation, which Barack Obama has agreed to do, and the Vatican going back under the gospel of Christ, it's also prudent that the tribes in North America and the other continents of the world, they come underneath the their responsibility as stewards of the land by virtue of the supreme law of the land, the treaty. So there's going to be a lot of different changes. We're going to be crashing the economy and taking out the currency, and tribal governments are going to be assigning two congressmen for each state. We just took over Manhattan Island again, under the Treaty of Friendship with the Lenape and the Delaware sovereign. And basically, what we were able to do when they were trying to pledge the arms and legs of all the American people to their bonds since 1921 in the Townsend Maternity Act, they were also trying to pledge all the federal trust lands of the United States, which never existed, as part of the collateralized debt. So what we had is we had a meeting to determine what debt. We don't have a debt. We're part of England, and England has $70 trillion in gold. So we don't have a debt. So we ask the creditors, Belgium and China and Japan and everyone else, show us a promissory note or an IOU or a tear sheet or something, you know. So basically, there's just so much. I was on Sean Hannity the other day with Jeb Bush and Hillary Clinton, and I said, you know, if I was running for president, which a lot of people have asked me to do, what I would do is I would just basically tell the American people, you know what, we're going to reclaim your birth certificate bonds, we're going to give everybody 350 acres of land, and we're going to, and when we release the Vatican 01 account, which we're fixing to do here pretty quick, I would like to see all this money based upon the illegal leveraging of CUSIP bonds. I would like to see all this money go back into infrastructure. And we told the black folk that I don't know what the intentions of the Vatican or the Illuminati or whoever these other weird folks are, but if you guys continue to pressure and try to bring in Jade Helm 15 to get rid of 6.5 billion people, your 500 million people are going to get checked off the planet. We ain't going to go with this stuff. This is our country. We made a big, big mistake by not taking out the rest of the army and the cavalry from Little Bighorn. So if there's problems in this country that we're going to start policing, then we're going to start sending people back home. We're not putting up with this. And as the ambassador and advocate of all the indigenous nations through the 2007 Human Rights Declaration, I have 15 million warriors at the standby and at the ready, because we're not, tonight is the deadline with Korea and the United States. There's going to be a war. There's no doubt about it. And there's nothing that the court systems can do, because basically we're kind of like too late. Too little, too late. But we would certainly
like to... I would disagree with that, and look at the court systems, the justice system. That tells us who we are
there's
as people.
Let me just
make my point though. But yeah, well, look at the structures are there, the buildings are there. That belongs to the people. We just need to take them back. The people need to step up and take control. That's what we, the people, are doing through National Liberty Alliance. But on top of that, the key part to our plan is also educating our sheriffs, getting them to understand who they are and what their duty is. And they, because they've taken out our militia, and we don't have a militia anymore, at least not one to speak of national, you know, across the nation in every state and every county, well, it's the sheriff's job now to round up the people under posse comitatus. So we can have 3,143 sheriffs call for posse comitatus in each one of those counties, round the people up to come to meet someplace and prepare to protect their counties and the resources within their counties. And there's not a nation in the world that can come and take us out when we, the people, come together as one in that fashion. And that's one of the things we're preparing the sheriffs for. And we put these things in the writing concerning posse comitatus and the emergencies and what the job and the duty and the authority of the sheriff is to do during that time. And also the military in itself, we've given them an order to stand down. The military is not to come onto the land one way or the other unless it's called upon by the sheriff in order to suppress something, and then they'd have to return back to the borders. But we've commanded the military, when the emergency breaks, and we agree it's going to break soon, when that emergency breaks, all military forces are to head for the borders and to protect the borders of the United States. We, the people, will protect ourselves within our counties with our sheriff. And those places that do have an organized militia, they can execute that working with the sheriffs, too. And that's how we're going to save the nation.
I'd like you to be a guest again. We're at the end of the hour here. I'd like invite you to be a guest again in a couple of weeks.
Sure. Just give me a call.
If you want to do so. And would you please close with prayer?
Okay. You want me to close with a prayer?
Yes, sir, please.
Okay, most holy, gracious Father, we're thankful, Lord, and we praise thee, Lord, because thou indeed art God, and there's none other beside us, beside you. We pray that thou would be merciful upon us sinners, and give mercy upon our souls. We ask that thou might bless those things that we're fighting for. We're fighting for justice, to bring your law and your word and your justice into our court systems, so America will have liberty again and be one nation under God again. We pray that thou bless us with these things. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen. For a great program tonight. I sorry we couldn't get more of our people I invited on to participate tonight, but we'll be able to do it again in another 2 or 3 weeks. So we'll be in touch, John.
And okay, George. Sounds good, Doug. Appreciate it.
Okay, good night.
Have a good night, everybody. Bye.
Bye.